Welcome to Ag Matters, covering the positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit of the Alaska Farmland Trust.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and joining me on the phone this morning is Emily Garrity of Twitter Creek Gardens down in Homer. Emily, thanks so much for joining me and good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to finally have you on the show. I've been doing Ag Matters now for coming up on 2 years, and you've been on my list since the very beginning. So I'm glad that we finally were able to connect, and I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy summer schedule to join me on the show.
Well, thanks so much for thinking of me. I appreciate it.
You bet. I always like to start the show, Emily, with a little bit of intro about my guests. So the two questions I typically ask are, how did you get to Alaska and how did you get involved in agriculture? So take it away. How'd you get here?
Well, I was born and raised in Alaska up in Fairbanks. So that's an easy one.
Yeah.
And then as far as how I got into agriculture, I started working for an elderly woman when I was about 19 years old, and I was her groundskeeper. So I kept her flowers, I maintained her small family vegetable garden, and really took a liking to working outside and working with plants. And then quickly transitioned into working for a commercial farm up in Fairbanks, basically Basil with Gretchen Current.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, so that was my first taste of commercial agriculture, but I always had this vision of living in Homer. So a few years after starting working with Gretchen, I made the trek down to Homer and was looking for a farm to work on, but there weren't really any big enough to hire extra hands. So that's kind of when I decided I needed to start one.
Yeah, very good. And so are there any farmers in your lineage, Emily? Did you just kind of always know you wanted farming, or what's kind of sparked that bug?
Yeah, no, there really aren't any farmers in my family. I think I'm one of the first. But that first job I had working with Pearl, you know, as a late teen and being able to work outside and working with plants, I just really loved everything about it. And then learning more about working with Gretchen and then starting to eat this kind of food, the local produce, the clean grown produce, always having that at my fingertips. I really think I just dived into the idea of the whole lifestyle and how I wanted to spend my time.
Absolutely. Well, I know that Gretchen has probably had that kind of impact on a lot of people in the interior region because she's kind of famous for the food that she produces and the products that she produces. And she's also on my list. That's a good reminder that I need to get Gretchen on the show sometime.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And so Homer, I'm a huge fan of Homer too, having grown up, you know, down on the southern Oregon coast, but you got a little taste of Homer and that's where you wanted to make your farm.
Exactly. Yeah. I started coming to Homer when I was about 14. My uncle moved down here. He also lived in Fairbanks, but he moved down to Homer and we started visiting him as a family. And I just got that bug in me that the ocean and the beautiful mountains. I really wanted to live by the water. Being landlocked in Fairbanks, there's beautiful aspects, obviously, about the interior, but I had this desire to be able to harvest my own seafood and just live in a place like this with those picturesque mountains and catching that fish. So yeah. I got the bug pretty early.
Well, it is a beautiful spot in the world. And speaking of that, let's for those of us that haven't been to your farm before, Emily, myself included, which I can't believe that I haven't been there yet, as long as we've known each other and as much work as we've done together, I still haven't made my trek down there. But paint a picture for us. Describe Twitter Creek Gardens to us and tell us what your farm looks like there in Homer.
Okay. We're about 10 miles outside of Homer. So Homer, as many listeners probably know, sits right on the water, and we're up in the bluffs above Homer. So we're at 1,100 feet in elevation, and it's a beautiful meandering 10-mile drive from Homer out into Olson Mountain. And as soon as you turn onto Olson Mountain, I call it the prettiest drive in America that nobody knows about, because you can see Kakamec Bay and the Kenai Mountains and across Cook Inlet and all of the volcanoes across the inlet, and then these beautiful wildflower fields and you just kind of feel like you're out in the country in this beautiful setting. And then driving down Olson Mountain a couple miles, you get to my road, Woodman Lane, and it spirals you down to Twitter Creek. So we're kind of nestled in the hillside between Twitter Creek and Lookout Mountain. And this piece of land, when I purchased it, it's 9 acres, and there was already a 4 or so acre wildflower meadow. So I just kind of carved the farm and farmhouse and greenhouses and root cellar and high tunnels into that 4 acre wildflower meadow. So we have about 2 acres under cultivation that's all fenced in a 7.5 foot fence to protect us mostly from moose. And then a series of greenhouses and high tunnels and what we call low-tech low tunnels, which I think I stole that name from Calypso, but it's a really simple poly structure with PVC rafters.
Okay, very good. So it sounds just incredibly beautiful. I'm hoping that there's some shots of the farm on your Facebook page and on your website where people can go and take a look. And I'm imagining of the 9 acres, so you said you've got 2 acres under cultivation. Are you rotating that 2 acres around throughout the 9 acres, or are you just kind of fixed with that 2 acres of production?
I'm fixed with the 2 acres. So it's a semi-permanent fence. We use spruce poles and hardware cloth to build the fence, so that's not really movable. And the rest of the 9 acres is pretty wooded. So we stick to that 2 acres that's already fenced in, but we rotate our plots within that 2 acres. So at any given time, there might be more like 1.5 acres actually growing, producing food, and the other might be in a cover crop or an animal rotation.
Okay, very good. And was the piece of property, was it being farmed when you bought it outside of that, the wildflowers? Was there production there, or did you buy into a working farm, or was this raw land?
This was raw land. This was land that no one had stepped foot on in 20 years.
Wow.
So I was tipped off that there was a landowner that hadn't stepped foot on their land for 20 years, and maybe I should just give them a call and see if they'd be interested in selling. And that's exactly what I did. And they were pretty quick to say, yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but let's do it. So I feel like I fell right into place for me.
Wow. And remind us, how many years ago was that, Emily?
I bought it in 05, so 13.
13 years. Wow. And I bet a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into the property to take it from raw land to what it is today.
Absolutely, a lot of all of those things.
Yeah, very good. Well, it's just I'm envisioning it and loving the idea of what you've got going on there. Just vegetables there on the farm, Emily? Are you also using or producing any animals?
So vegetables and herbs, and then we grow a small flock of broiler chickens. We have a layered flock of chickens, mostly just for eggs for us and the farm crew. And then we raise a few pigs, and we do incorporate the broiler chickens and the pigs into the animal rotations within the garden plot.
Yeah, those pigs can be quite the help on the farm. I was just seeing another farm's post on Facebook today about clearing raw land with pigs, and it was incredibly impressive what those pigs could do over the course of a season.
It is, yeah. I used pigs to clear the last 3/4 of an acre that I have fenced in. I put them in there for 2 years, and it was pretty much beautifully tilled, ready to plant ground by the time I got them out of there.
That's great. Well, just a quick reminder to listeners that this is Ag Matters Radio, and I'm your host, Amy Pettit. And joining me on the phone this morning is Emily Garrity of Twitter Creek Gardens down in Homer. And again, Emily, thanks for joining us and being here and describing your farm for us. Let's start talking about some of the varieties of vegetables and different seasonal crops that you're growing there on the farm.
Okay. I think that we grow right around 50 different varieties. So basically what we're growing is in the brassica family. So a lot of the cauliflower, broccoli, cabbage, some of the root brassicas, radishes, turnips. Of course, we're growing carrots, beets, chard. A lot of hardy greens, a lot of Asian greens and succession crops, meaning we just plant them every 2 weeks for the entire season, along with, we kind of specialize in specialty salad mixes, and we also plant those every 2 weeks throughout the entire season, so in successions. And we supply between 8 and 10 restaurants with those mixes, and that's kind of what we're known for at the farmers market as well.
Yeah.
So a pretty good list, and we use that much, or we grow that much diversity mainly so we have a good selection for our CSA members, and then some of the quicker growing higher dollar crops we specialize in to make sure that we have big quantities to sell to restaurants, and we have even started stocking in a local grocery store our greens. So that's
cool. That's awesome. 50 varieties of vegetables is plenty to keep track of, and a lot to keep in rotation, and a lot to keep organized and recorded, right?
It is. It absolutely is. Yes.
If you take us back to year one, what can you remember what your numbers were back then? You certainly didn't start out with 50 varieties, I assume.
I did not. No. Going back to year one, I actually started a tiny garden plot on borrowed land, and I had that going for 2 years before I even purchased what's now Twitter Creek Gardens. And that first garden was about 1,000 square feet. And I had 4 CSA members and had a very modest stand at the farmer's market. And looking back, I kind of remember myself on a tiny little farmer's market table with a couple bunches of herbs and maybe a few bundles of radishes or something to get started. So it was definitely very small scale and grew from there.
Yeah. Well, 1,000 square feet to 2 acres today is, I'm not good at math, but that's a tremendous growth over time, right?
It is. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Well, I love it. So you said you're in restaurants, you're at the farmer's market, you're starting to sell product in grocery store. I know that you're also a member or selling through the Kenai Peninsula Food Hub, right? What's now known as the Alaska Food Hub?
We are. Yeah, we've been selling through the Alaska Food Hub since it started. This is the third season, and that's a really cool venue for customers to be able to get local products.
Yeah. And you still have CSA members as well. So that oftentimes we see farms kind of maybe they start with CSA boxes and then they graduate to the farmer's market and then they go on to the commercial sales at the grocery store or restaurants. But you're still kind of doing a little bit of everything, it sounds like.
We are doing a little bit of everything. Yeah, we our CSA subscribers in typical fashion pay a set amount for the entire season in the beginning of the year. So we kind of look at that as our insurance policy. So it's a set number every season in the beginning of the year. And then we make sure that we have enough to harvest for all of our other, you know, avenues of sale as well, but making sure that CSA members are filled first.
Yeah.
That market is filled first.
Very good. That's awesome. There's so much momentum down there. And I would also say that the Homer Farmers Market is one of the, you know, leaders across the state in terms of innovation and trying new things and getting the community really invested in the farmers market scene. And I know, obviously, you mentioned that that's kind of where you got your start. I haven't been to the Homer Farmers Market in a number of summers, but it's definitely one of my favorite to visit. In the whole state, it's just you guys do some great things down there and always fun, like kids activities and great music, and it's certainly grown tremendously over the years as well.
It has, yeah. It's a really popular market. It's the hardest part about the Homer Farmers Market is finding a parking spot on a Saturday. It's just plugged full, and people are in and out of there, and yeah, we're just slinging vegetables as fast as we can down there. So
I bet.
It's really popular.
Yeah. And you mentioned that you also sell through the Alaska Food Hub. So that got its start a couple of years ago down there. And have you been enjoying having that additional outlet?
I have. Yeah. I really appreciate that they cater to outlying communities so we can get our products to Soldovia, up to Nanilchik, Soldotna, I'm trying to think of the other stops. They're not coming to me off the top of my head. But the fact that we have transportation included to those outlying communities is really helpful. And just the ease of it, I think, again, the Homer Farmers Market being as busy as it is, it doesn't appeal to everyone to get there at 10 a.m. on a Saturday morning to make sure that you get the best of what the local producers have. So I think that ease of online shopping and just having your cart ready for pickup on a Wednesday really appeals to other customers. So it was just an attempt to, you know, to make locally grown products more accessible to people of, you know, all different shopping comfort comforts.
Yeah. No, I totally get it. And as a Palmer resident, you know, we're right here in the heart of farm country. And yet many Palmer folks would tell you that it's sometimes difficult to find Alaska grown because many of our farmers are taking their products into Anchorage and even getting Alaska grown at the grocery stores, although it's available sometimes not as much or much variety. Boy, I would love to have a Alaska Food Hub box available here in Palmer, perhaps as the Anchorage edition of that Food Hub grows. Maybe Palmer will be one of the next stops, because I would love to be able to shop in that way. I think it just provides the convenience and ease, and it's on my own schedule, right? I can log on to Alaska Food Hub in the middle of the night if I want to and select my basket and then have it show up at the drop location. It's just it's a cool thing, and I think it's part of the time. You know, customers are expecting these types of ease of access and shop from my phone and all these creature comforts, and it's super exciting to see the Alaska Food Hub be so successful and have that other additional outlet for farmers and consumers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think it was a progressive model and something that just needed to happen to really boost the accessibility of our products.
Absolutely. Well, another reminder to listeners that this is Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and joining me from Homer this morning is Emily Garrity from Twitter Creek Gardens. And Emily, you have an exciting event coming up at Twitter Creek Gardens, right? Are there still tickets available for that? Should we mention it, or are you sold out?
Sure. Yeah, there are a few tickets left. We're hosting a farm-to-table dinner on Saturday, and it's a fundraiser for Cook Inlet Keeper, but it will be an 8-course on-farm fine dining experience.
Oh, wow. I wish I could be there. 8 courses, and is it all product grown there on your farm?
It's mostly products grown on the farm, if not grown on the farm in Homer, and then it'll be seafood centric. So we're highlighting the seafood from the area as well.
Yeah, incredible. Well, I know that the lucky folks who get to attend that are going to have quite the experience on their hands. And I wish I could get down there. If folks are interested in attending, where should they go for ticket information?
They should contact Marissa or Robbie at Cook Inlet Keeper.
Okay.
And I think it's robbie@inletkeeper.org or marissa@inletkeeper.org are their email addresses.
Perfect. Well, when we post information about the show, we will certainly include a link to Robbie and Marissa and the Cook Inlet Keeper. But I'm excited for you. I look forward to seeing pictures from that event. And hopefully if it becomes an annual thing, I can make it down there next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, no doubt. Hopefully you get great weather. And you at the farm, you have other opportunities for folks to visit the farm, right? Do you have like a rental venue on the farm? Is that correct?
We do. We have a yurt. We call it the Farm Yurt, and it's listed on Airbnb. And it's been pretty popular for people that are just interested in farming or want a kind of a quiet getaway off the beaten path. And also we have an open gate policy during our working hours. So anyone's allowed, we encourage people to come out and take a look at the garden so they can get to know how we're growing and what we're doing up here. And we pretty much work Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., with the exception of some, you know, farmers market and delivery times. But there's almost always somebody in the field between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. So we encourage people to come check it out.
I like that, an open gate policy. I haven't heard that from many other farms, so what a cool opportunity for folks.
Yeah, we don't always have the time to stop and chat, or most of the time we don't have the time, but we definitely are willing to have people kind of follow us around and ask questions or just take a self-guided tour.
Very good. I love it. Well, Emily, one of the things that I, again, always like to ask guests is to, and you kind of mentioned this in your introduction about the farm, that 2 acres is kind of right where you want to be in terms of size and scope of Twitter Creek. But use your crystal ball and fast forward 5 to 10 years with the farm. What's next for you, or how do you hope that the farm changes or progresses over that course of time?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question. So I say 2 acres is just about the right size because we're growing in a bio-intensive fashion, which means we're putting as many plants as we possibly can in that amount of space, and we're not tractor farming. So we don't need the space that would be required for turning tractors around or for having large spacing between plants to cultivate with a tractor. So almost everything we do is by hand,
We have a walk behind BCS tractor that can really turn around and be utilized in tight spaces. And the reason we can grow so many vegetables in such a small amount of acreage is we keep our soil nutrients really high. So that's kind of the key. And moving forward, it's more just efficiency. We have opportunity to grow even more than what we are. We're producing quite a bit right now, but I think as we hone in our systems and our efficiency, we can boost our yields even higher. So one of the things that's up and coming for us is we just got funded for a grant that will help us procure several of the newest technology industry, and we hope to hone in those skills and then be able to share them to other farmers in the state. So kind of setting ourselves up as a demonstration farm, and hopefully we're going to learn a lot and make our systems really efficient and useful, and then be able to share that information. So that's kind of the next 5 years, I would say, is just honing in systems, growing more on the same amount of acreage.
Yeah. I'm super excited about that project that you've got launching with the tool library, et cetera. You know, one of the criticisms that we hear sometimes about folks that are farming at your scale, and particularly folks that are doing most of the work by hand, is you'll hear people say, well, how sustainable is that? Because what happens if Emily breaks her arm, or what happens if Emily, you know, breaks her leg and can't, you know, do that physically demanding labor by hand any longer? So how would you answer that question? You know, when a farm is so reliant on physical labor from particularly the farm owner, how sustainable is that? Or what's your plan for sustainability in that regard?
That's an excellent question. I think about that.
Yeah, I bet.
I do think about that, but I have, you know, we bring in interns every year, and there seems to be this incredible resurgence of interest in this industry, especially among 20-somethings that are just dying to get out there and learn how to farm on this scale. So, and I have one other gal that's kind of at the forefront with me as far as the farm tasks, and she knows how everything operates. It really, if something happened to me personally, I feel like I've have enough people involved that it could sustain that way. So training more people, more farmers, is definitely part of it. But it would be tricky. It certainly would be tricky. And as far as sustainability goes, you know, my first 10 years of farming, I recognized, you know, in the 9th, 10th year that it was absolutely unsustainable. I was working around the clock.
Yeah.
You know, Alaska summers, we just have so much light. It just makes you want to be out there in the field. But I've learned from some of our mentors, you know, I've spoken directly to Elliot Coleman and to Dr. Fortier and to Joel Soliton, and all of them kind of emphasize, like, you absolutely need to have a schedule. You need to stick to it, and you need time off.
Yeah.
You know, one day off a week, and we've kind of incorporated those things into our schedule just for, you know, minimizing. We all have Sundays off. Everybody on the farm gets at least one 3-day weekend a month.
There you go.
Everybody on the farm gets 1 week off during the season. And we take that month and a half off in the winter to really recharge. And I think that's really changed our efficiency.
Absolutely.
So we're trying to incorporate some of those things to make it more sustainable, and then training, you know, more people in the area how to do what we're doing. So if there ever was an injury or a need for a fill-in, then hopefully that would be available.
Yeah, very good. And Emily, so you mentioned that 2 of the 9 acres is fenced, and I assume that's to keep out one of Alaskan farmers' number one pests, which is moose. Is that your biggest challenge there on the farm, is moose, or are there other pests or things that are challenges for you guys?
That's the biggest one. Yeah,
okay.
Our fence is 7.5 feet tall and surrounds the entire garden. And then we actually have a chicken wire going around the bottom 2 feet of the garden for rabbits. One year we had really bad rabbits, porcupines, and then we have free-range chickens. So keeping
those chickens out. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
very good.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Emily, it's been such a sincere pleasure to have this chat with you this morning about Twitter Creek Gardens. Thank you so much for taking the time to be my guest on Ag Matters. Remind folks that they can check out more about the farm by looking you up on Facebook and Instagram. And if there are any folks that plan to be down in Homer this weekend, I highly encourage that they check out that benefit 8-course meal dinner that's happening this Saturday. So again, Emily, thanks so much for joining me, and cheers to the second half of your season being productive and enjoyable for you.
Thanks so much for having me, Amy.
Have a great day.
You too.
You've been listening to Ag Matters, covering positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit, of the Alaska Farmland Trust. Ag Matters is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. For more information about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.